When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's a podcast that's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle, and I should say, more appropriately, the ever-expanding Marvel Cinematic Multiverse is more appropriate. Robbie, I am busier today and this week and the last 6 weeks than I've ever been in my life. And so this week's episode was a prime candidate to take a week off and just cancel, because you and I have no time at all right now. Mm-hmm. Then we watched X-Men 1 and 2, and I thought we cannot miss talking about this. So here we are at 7 a.m. on a Friday morning, and we're going to give you a rapid fire, extremely fast-paced X-Men 1 and 2 breakdown. We're talking 30 minutes maximum. And then hopefully we'll be back to our regular schedule next week. So today, somewhere in between a Marvelette and a full episode, I want to talk about X-Men 1 and 2.
Yes. And before we get in, since we are entering officially the Age of X here, we should note that our sponsor today is Nerd Riot.
We're
back. They're back. And look at this. This isn't even the full picture. Look at this bad boy.
I've
got X on X on X.
That's Triple pretty X, sick.
Maybe not. I should say this drop is one of my favorites so far. The Guardians drop prior to that, which you're repping, was my favorite until then. But I've got some, like, they sent me all kinds of fun stuff. And for, like, the nice thing about this as opposed to Guardians is we're entering a whole season of X-Men stuff between X-97 and Deadpool 3. So it's going to be relevant for like the next, 6 months. So it's, I would highly recommend Nerd Riot.
You know what I always say? I love merch where if you know, you know. So if you're a nerd, you can be like, that's so cool. But if you don't know what it is, I don't want it to be just screaming like 90s graphic, type tees.
Right.
This is a perfect example because it's March Madness right now, and Xavier is typically a school that's in the tournament. So you came on this podcast, and I didn't even notice. I was like, oh, he's wearing a Xavier like college shirt. That's exactly what I want. It's way cooler.
I know, that's the goal. You should have to look at it for a little bit.
That's right. Nerdriot.shop, promo code Friends from Work. Okay, Robbie, basically, I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this. X-Men 97 episodes 1 and 2, for those who don't know, currently sits at 100% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. And Annika and I watched it, really enjoyed it. But basically, you're the expert here, and I kind of want to hear your thoughts. You texted me something before I had seen it that got me really excited, and I think got a lot of our listeners excited. I posted it on social media. But just take me through 1 and 2.
So big picture, and I'm excited to hear your reaction too, because I haven't really talked to anybody that has watched this that didn't have any familiarity with the original series, but we can circle back to that. I was seeing ahead of these episodes a lot of good initial feedback. We actually had the opportunity this time around to go in and go to the red carpet premiere for the series, which I think would have been really fun. It just, because of what you mentioned with our schedules, it just wasn't going to make sense. But it was encouraging to start seeing good chatter coming out of that. Although you never know exactly how that'll cut. And, you know, we've talked about projects that have a lot of great buzz early on and don't. So the hype was kind of building for me. And when I sat down to watch it, I was a little worried that I was going in with expectations that were too high. And that's why I think I was so blown away, because it exceeded my, like, whatever I was thinking would be the like platonic ideal of this. It so far exceeded those expectations. Like, I think
specifically I'm curious about.
Yeah. So for me, I think it's in comparison to the other animated stuff that we've gotten from Marvel recently, which is really just What If. I'm not counting like the Spider-Verse stuff in that. We've been pretty positive on What If for the most part. And so this is not at all a dig, but I think that there's kind of a cap to the amount that I ever feel invested in that series, because in part it's inherently, you know, the structure is kind of one-off-y and it's mostly just riffing on existing elements of the mythology. So it doesn't feel as though it's inviting you into like a whole new saga or like giving you like ongoing relationships and drama. And that is something that X-Men has always done better than I think any other comic, is like nail that sort of like space opera-y thing. And the original series did that so well. But I think that the reason why I was still so pleasantly surprised is the original series, like we talked about before, is very like 90s Saturday morning cartoon. Like it's like a for which is generally awesome and really fun, but also means that it has limited value to someone that's coming in as an adult that's wanting to get something out of it that you would normally get out of like a primetime television show. And so I think with those things in mind, I just thought that there would be a natural kind of cap for how interested I would be in this project. But they did this incredible job of somehow perfectly following up on the original series, where it's like they're working in all the main themes and characters, and these different subplots are being followed up on, you know, almost 30 years later. In a way that does not feel forced, that somehow feels totally like in continuity, but they're also aging it up in a way that feels not forced, but makes it feel like people like me who grew up on this when I was, you know, like 6 or 7 can now come back, and it's like they've now tweaked it to fit me as like a 32-year-old instead of like a 6 or 7-year-old, in that you have a little bit more adult themes. Like you're having like actual kind of relational drama and conversations between like Storm and Jean that feel really meaningful and substantive.
And a crisis of who is Storm if she's not an X-Men?
Yeah. Yeah. Like dealing with, and dealing with themes that I think the movies have not even dealt with as effectively. And then on top of all that, I think the comics fan in me, and I've been going through and reading more of these classic X-Men comics in preparation for this whole era, I was also struck by how effectively they are adapting, like kind of continuing the process of adapting these classic Chris Claremont era stories that they were doing in the original series. And the pacing of that is really great. Like we always talk about how the MCU adapts stories like that, and there can kind of be some minefields involved. And they've always done a really good job of figuring out like how to pull certain things out and like combine certain elements. And so, especially in episode 3, which I don't know if you got to watch yet.
No, didn't watch it yet.
But that's another example. Like it's sort of that thing where by the time you get to that one, for me at least, I was seeing the rhythm and how they're adapting certain things and melding them all together. So all of that, like the way that they were able to kind of age it up appropriately without making it too adult, and therefore like, which would have turned me off and also foreclosed a lot of people watching with their kids. That was impressive. But the way that they were still able to continue the original stories and vibe from the 90s was impressive. The way that they were able to adapt everything so effectively was impressive. And then the final thing was just the animation, I thought looked incredible and was kind of what I think I wish What If looked more like, which is totally a preference thing, but it's like, I really love the Invincible animation style. And this reminds me a lot of that, where it's like bringing in some of the things that I think work really well in like the kind of quasi anime context,
exactly.
But then not in a way that like, again, it's not like such a departure from the original animation style that it feels like a break.
I know nothing about that, but that was my sense too. It almost has a tiny bit of an anime stop motion feel. It's like it's missing a few frames compared to What If, barely.
Right.
But again, I'm not an expert in that. No, I think I really agree. I got to say up front, so I don't have any of the nostalgia. Like I wish you knew how little I knew about it. This and just cartoons in general were really not a part of my life at all growing up. So I never really got into Saturday morning sitting down and watching any of these shows. I have no memory of any of it. Can't emphasize that strongly enough. So I totally understand where the show is doing the nostalgia really well. And I can look at that and go, oh my gosh, that's so clever. But it's not hitting me in the same way it's going to hit you or even Annika, because she watched this growing up. And she actually recently kind of rewatched. I didn't even know this. While I was gone at golf, rewatched some of the other animated stuff. I didn't know that until we were watching this.
Oh, that's fun. Like the stuff that we were watching on the Saturday morning cartoons front? Nice.
I didn't know she was watching some of that too. So there are a lot of things that she picked up on that I immediately didn't. That's the second thing is, not only do I not have the nostalgia, there definitely is some level of needing to know a little bit of background. I mean, it's a continuation. And if you don't have any of it, I think I thought I'd be even more set straight from the beginning. Like, it seems like they were more emphasizing picking up right away from where it left off and less like a reboot of sorts to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, I only knew that Professor X was dead because you told me last week.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's obviously the whole main driver of the first episode. So I didn't have the nostalgia and I don't have any of the background. That being said, I really had a great time. A couple things. The intro sequence absolutely slaps. Uh-huh. I don't know how it's missed that in the 90s. And when you've been doing the and like all that stuff, I didn't even fully get it because I didn't know that theme. So this is my first time really hearing it, other than obviously the shout out in Multiverse of Madness. And I love it. I love it. But it's great. And I did this, I found this out from some research, both that I did on Google and on Discord from a few listeners. Apparently, a big step up, though, is not just the theme that they had, but now we have actual composers kind of making some meaningful score moments outside of the theme. So not only did the theme hit me, like when they're battling the Sentinels, I was like, let's go, this is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But also there's actually some sensitive moments that's including a full orchestra that I guess wasn't as emphasized in the originals. So that's one way that's maybe they improved as well. So that, like, sonically, that was a huge highlight for me. I feel like Cyclops is a little stiff. Is that crazy, or is that just, is a nostalgia clouding that, or am I in the incorrect side there?
No, so I guess there are two ways of looking at that. I think that the character himself is
supposed to be like Captain America, like really straight laced.
Yeah, and I think like in the original, Cyclops is an interesting character in the really all adaptations where it's like
Marsden plays it a little looser though, and a little more emotive with his dialogue than this guy.
And I kind of that I've always thought, I think I said this on our first X-Men rewatch, which reminder, we are moving forward with over on Friends from Work Plus, and that's been a ton of fun. So if you're enjoying this,
This Thursday, X-Men First Class.
Yes. Yeah. And that's gonna be a really fun one to hear.
Here we go.
I came in with the hot takes on that.
Everybody online was like, oh, can't wait for Kyle to see First Class because it just continues all the momentum. And I'm thinking, oh no, they don't know that Robbie doesn't like it that much. Oh no, they don't know. They're going to find out.
Oh man.
It's one of the really rare times where I come out of something more positively than you, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm like,
Anyway.
But yeah, I think that the, like, I've always thought Marsden's performance was really underrated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it kind of, the Captain America comparison is kind of an apt one, not because the characters are super similar, although they are both the kind of like leader strategy guys on their team, with the moral compass, but it's also like on the page, when you have a character like that, it can sometimes be hard to make them, like to give you the buy-in, like the investment that you can get with like the troubled loner, like Wolverine,
yeah,
or like the funny guy, like even, I mean, depending on the project, like Nightcrawler or Iceman or something. And so I think the show has always leaned into Cyclops just being stiff and kind of like, he's the guy that takes himself too seriously and takes everything too seriously and always thinks that like,
is there
nobody
a tiny
else's
bit of Reed Richards in there? A little bit of kind of being naive or not?
A little bit, I think. I think that the difference is that Reed is more like, Reed's got a little bit more of the Tony energy where he is, he's like so imaginative and creative that I think he bypasses like moral black and whites.
Ah, okay.
And I think that Cyclops would be, it is kind of Captain America-esque, and that I think he would be quicker to say like, this is the right thing and this is the wrong thing. And like, it doesn't really matter what's possible or feasible.
Even visually, I think the comparison is apt. Just a very well built out, tall, yeah, white man, like same kind, yeah, of hair, very like, it just feels kind of like America, you know, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, I thought he was a little bit stiff, but I understand that's the character. But for the most part, I thought all the old voice actors did an amazing job.
Yeah, and that is a new voice actor for Cyclops.
Oh, that's a new one. Okay.
Yeah, so that, although, you know, I think he's doing a good job. But yeah, the whole reason why I went into the Captain America thing was really just to say, I think that in the same way we used to talk about, in the same way that we used to talk about Chris Evans really breathing life into and humanizing that character.
Sure.
I think Marsden did something, not to the same extent, but something similar with Cyclops that I think.
And now I'm seeing that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Plot wise, I picked up on a couple of little Easter eggs that aren't even Easter eggs to you, but like Madripoor is from an X-Men type thing, right? Like,
right.
I know that from the MCU, but I think when we were talking about that in Falcon and Winter Soldier, you reminded me that that's typically from an X-Men comic, right?
And I think the specifically Logan, one of the fun things about the Wolverine character is he's been alive for so long that, I mean, we saw Origins touch on this a bit. We haven't talked about that movie yet, but there are so many incarnations of Logan because he's been around for hundreds of years and has shown up as like a soldier and a spy and whatever. And so there's a shot in the Deadpool 3 trailer of Logan sitting at a bar. We assume it's Logan sitting at a bar in Madripoor with like the white jacket, which is kind of a classic thing where he has like a persona that goes to Madripoor. And so I think that's okay. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting seeing, you know, once we get into that, how they're going to link in the Madripoor we saw in Falcon Winter Soldier to that. But I like that that's both an Easter egg for people that have followed the MCU to date and also people that are kind of looking ahead at what Deadpool 3 may touch on.
Sure. Is that a classic adaptation visually of Magneto? I was not expecting the long hair, the exposed shoulders.
Yeah.
Incredible. And the giant M on his chest just did it for me. I mean, that's when I was like, okay.
That's the thing where when I talk about the like the adaptation portion, if you had watched the original series, Magneto looks exactly like you would expect Magneto to look. Like, he's always wearing the helmet. It's like no M. It's just like the, basically like the cartoon version
Fassbender.
Yeah. In like, I think what he wears in Future Past.
Okay.
Where it's like the purple.
And it's so cool. Oh my gosh. Yes.
But here, they're kind of marching right along. Like, if you're following the Uncanny X-Men comics, like the almost like omni by omni, like when you get into the volume 5 is where like there's a big arc called The Trial of Magneto. And there's a famous cover where he's like standing with his hands in handcuffs and helmet off. And he's wearing like a costume with a big M. And it's this moment where Magneto is trying to transition from villain to more like anti-hero.
Like here.
So they are straight up just adapting it even visually. And that's where I was like, wow, like they're committed to following, like continuing this exact journey, like the intent of the show to make these like comic arcs accessible. And so I don't know if they're going to continue. Like, I have to imagine at some point they'll revert to a Magneto where he's wearing the helmet more often and stuff. But I do, it is comic accurate that he has the, at certain points, the long flowing white hair. And so I like that they're letting him have the flow.
It's a beautiful,
it's so funny.
Flow.
It's like the total, like, it, I love that whoever's idea it was, they were clearly thinking, just in the same way that Xavier and Magneto have opposite philosophies, they also have opposite amounts of hair.
Yeah, sure. Less than 10 minutes here. Plot-wise, I thought episode 2 was a pretty big step over episode 1, step up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you would agree with that. Don't react to anything I'm about to say if it happens in episode 3. Please do not react. But I... both Anik and I are really hooked by the cliffhanger ending of episode 2, that another gene of some sort shows up. Again, I have no context. I don't know if this is like Morph or somebody like that, or Mystique or something like that, or if it's a clone, or if it's someone from time travel. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but we're really intrigued by that. Don't say anything. And
it was a great ending, though. I felt the same way.
Yeah, great ending. And the whole philosophical difference with Magneto was a pretty cool plot line, where if it, like, I'm trying to figure out, is he really being sincere and trying to change, or is he just got a master plan and he's manipulating the whole thing? So that really intrigued me as well. So those are both things from episode 2 that, like, episode 1 I thought was really fun. Nostalgia, by the way, the end credits too is so cool. The title card and all that, and the music, and just kind of getting my bearings of, oh my gosh, I've never seen any kind of animated thing like this. So I'm just kind of trying to see if I like it. Like for example, when they fight the Sentinels, I'm a little bit like, okay, power levels wise, like, these are supposed to be these super powerful Sentinels. Like, this was the humans' plan to stop them, and then it's over in 2 seconds. But I get it. It's not the end all be all. Like, the Sentinels are handled really well in Days of Future Past, I feel like, where it's actually terrifying of what could happen with them. So anyways, my point is I was trying to get my bearings a little bit with episode 1, and then episode 2, I felt like I really kind of settled in, and I liked it messing, like we talked about, with slightly deeper issues. There's the thumbs up. Man, we both turned it off and it's back. Okay, so we're going to figure that out. You had one earlier. But the slightly the deeper issues with Storm, who has now lost her powers, and Magneto, is he really changing his vibe? Is he altruistic now? Can we trust him? And then the weirdness with Jean being pregnant and Scott having to leave, and then Jean showing up at the end. And like, so in general, I felt like episode 2 was more my scene.
You also get, I think, I'm trying to think timeline wise. Is that where we have like Logan driving Jean to the hospital?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so you get a little bit of the love triangle thing that we've talked about. Some.
Sure. But also Gambit, by the way. Gambit having a thing for Rogue, I think. But Rogue has a thing for Magneto?
So in the show, and in the comics for the most part, but in the show, that's a big ongoing thing, that Rogue and Gambit are together to some extent. Like, he's always trying to bring them closer, and Rogue, because of her mutant power and her inability to touch people, is always kind of like, you know, literally and metaphorically pushing him away. The Magneto thing is a new inclusion on the show side. Like, that was never explored in the show in the 90s, which kind of makes sense because
it feels a little bit like Mystique, the way the live action films handle.
Yeah,
there's some tension there between the two of them.
And that's one of the things that I feel like would have been like kind of icky to like 7 year old me.
Sure.
Whereas like now it feels like they are taking like a more nuanced approach to these characters' relationships.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a new, I'm really curious to see where that goes, but that's a new one.
What else? Tell me anything else as we're wrapping up here.
I do think on the Sentinel front, just you should know contextually, they are made a really big deal and a big threat in the series. I think that it was a really easy way to, you know, put you right back in that vibe and also set, you know, raise the X-Men up to the point where then I think to the extent they want to deconstruct and like put them through things in the series, they can. But I think you also kind of have the understanding in that scene that this is not a full-on Sentinel resurgence. Like, this is kind of like a Trask's attempt to undo past defeats, but like half-heartedly, because it's like he's clearly, he doesn't have the resources that he had and all that stuff. And so I think that there is still the underlying threat of like people are getting Sentinel gear and like that's getting out there, and that there are like, you know, even in the fact that like the tech that we saw used against Storm, even though that is using also like the collar stuff, it's like, I think that there's a greater threat behind the scenes that those are just like symptoms and signs of. So I think that you are, like, the way that you're viewing Sentinels based on Days of Future Past is correct, like, power level-wise. I think that this was just supposed to be seen as, like, the opening volley sort of a thing.
Well, you know what I'm talking about there, because in Days of Future Past, they can't stop the Sentinels. It's literally inevitable, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
And then here, they kind of just wipe them off the map easily.
And I do wonder if we're going to get something that, I mean, we've already kind of gotten that in the 90s show, but like there, you know, you have the original Sentinels that are real like blocky.
Sure.
And then you've got the like future ones that are like, they regenerate. Yeah. And so I think, you know, clearly this is the version that is more manageable. And then there's always the like, but down the line they evolve and become,
good point,
you know, invincible.
And all of the Sentinel tech is invented by Trask in the previous, like in the comics or in X-Men 96, 95, whatever. In the original.
It's actually the very first episode of the series is called Night of the Sentinels. And it's like the first introduction to, which is the other reason why I think that they did it in the first episode here. You're introduced to the X-Men and the Sentinels in the very same episode. So it's kind of like, that's the core of the property.
We had a blast. I'm really excited to kind of see if they follow up with the Gene stuff in episode 3. You've already seen episode 3. I did not catch the full breadth of my screeners, so I have not gone beyond where we are now. Next week will be a full episode diving into episode 3. And I think I can say this now. We're working on trying to talk with some of the cast and creators of this show. We think it'd be kind of fun if maybe every week we could just have a quick conversation with someone highlighting something they did from that episode, which would be really fun. Who knows if that will happen, but we're working on it. I had fun. I'm glad you loved it. Closing words.
You know what? I think that the really encouraging thing here for me is that this is done so well, and I know that there are other animated projects coming down the pipe, and like we've got your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is the like rebranded Spider-Man Freshman Year, and the Eyes of Wakanda show. And I've seen some stuff from Brad Winterbaum talking about how excited he is for those projects, and I've seen him talking about which, shout out to Greg for always forwarding these things on, but talking about even how they're looking at how successful they view X-Men 97 just creatively, even prior to the critical reaction. and we're talking about the influence that had along with Loki in what they're trying to do with Daredevil Born Again and the things that they think that they pulled off continuity-wise with X-Men 97 that they're also wanting to pull off with Daredevil Born Again as it relates to the Netflix series. And so because of those quotes, like, you know, if this series had been disappointing to me, those would make me, if not discouraged, they, you know, they wouldn't be encouraging things. But to see them pull this off so well makes me really excited now to see what, like, the Spider-Man and Wakanda shows look like. And it just makes me excited for, like, their general level of kind of quality control and creativity right now, if this is the standard that they're trying to set.
I love that that's how you're finishing, because if we just kind of accept that the cultural view of the MCU was at its low point with Secret Invasion, I think it kind of started with Quantumania, where there was a huge divide between audience and critic, where people like you and I really loved it, and then critics didn't like it. And that kind of kicked off this weird discussion. And then if you say the low point was most people didn't like, both critics and audience, Secret Invasion, I'm encouraged that it feels like we're just taking lots of steps towards getting kind of back on top for the MCU, especially with what's coming. But yeah, Loki season two and the way Echo actually got people kind of re-tied into some other projects.
And even What If season two
was a success. Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, you had Guardians obviously earlier in that summer. And now this comes out. And like you said, if this is the show that's fundamentally changing their way of thinking for shows like Daredevil, if this was a disappointment, you're right. We'd be like, oh no, they're fundamentally changing it in the wrong way. But it feels like not only all the projects that are coming out, but also the decisions that are being made seem to be in the correct direction. Hopefully this continues the quality and people, you know, it ends with 100% and people love the nostalgia factor. And it just kind of stair steps us to hopefully a slam dunk with Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, and I said this before, but I really think if then Agatha or Daredevil is fantastic, then we're really cooking with gas and kind of back to where we were, I think, at that point with the trajectory. But anyways, yes, I'm with you that I'm excited that this was so well done because of what it means for where we could be headed. Thank you so much for listening. Check out nerdriot.shop. Check out our website, the ffwpodcast.com. We have some merch on there too. So if you want to rep some Friends from Work merch, you can go there. By the way, I now added that merchandise on TikTok. We have a TikTok shop. You can buy it directly on the app. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Next week will be a full episode talking about X-Men Episode 3. And we'll be right back here on Friends for More.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.